Hello and welcome to The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24. Each week we'll be hearing from the sharpest minds and freshest thinkers in the world of finance, taking you beyond the numbers and the hype and getting to the heart of the big issues of the day. This week we're stopping off in Zurich at the second UBS Future of Finance Forum. The first event in London in September focused on digital identity. This one focused on automation and artificial intelligence, particularly in banking and finance. The forums bring together industry leaders, experts, and innovators from across the space. The key thrust of the forum is to unpack the challenges and opportunities presented by artificial intelligence, machine learning, and robotics, and to discuss how market participants, regulators, and consumers can benefit from intelligent automation in a global economy. We start with a little bit of a scene setter to the second Future of Finance Forum. Veronica Langer is Head of Innovation and CTO of UBS, and she welcomed the delegates. She began by explaining what brought the event together.
This is basically a follow-up from last year where we did an open innovation challenge, and we found a lot of great ideas from startups all over the world. And we wanted to follow up some of the trends that we had identified last year in those many startups ideas that are emerging all over the place. And four topics really resonated with us and caused us to think these are areas where there's a lot of uncertainty how they will come through, how they will affect financial services industry, and also how we can collaborate best across tech partners, academia, banks, regulators, and other market participants to move these forward, because there's such a great potential that these technology innovations bring to us.
Axel Lehmann, Group CEO for UBS, talked to the delegates and guests about the hunger of UBS, and indeed of the whole sector, for innovation and progress in this space.
UBS is a bank. We are more than 150 years old, 155 or something like that. Probably without any innovation, we would not be where we are. You don't turn 150 years old without any innovation. Actually, when you look to the overall banking industry, which is obviously, and financial services in general, is highly regulated, which is partially, you could argue, it is what it is, but partially maybe also maybe a slight impediment when it comes to innovation. On the other hand, when you look just to some statistics, the banking financial service industry has the second highest spend when it comes to technology, after the tech industry itself. And actually, when you see how innovation or where innovation is coming from, you can go back 40, 50 years, you know, when the first ATMs came. That was a huge challenge at the time for the traditional bank branch network that you had, and somewhat the industry, including UBS, we managed through, and today it's absolutely normal. Everybody knows that. 10 years later in the 80s, you know, huge investments in technology, and that we have today what some people recall as a kind of a global financial system. We have capabilities to process every day millions and billions of customer data, security data. We can map it, we can process it, we can work on it. These are, you know, big technology-driven innovations, and we were always forced to embrace.
Axel Lehmann was talking about the need to adapt, to change, and to innovate. But those processes are pregnant with challenges, and there are many other reservations that people have about progress in AI, in machine learning, and so on. We'll hear more about what the panelists and guests had to say on that front next. Let's turn then to some of those industry leaders and innovators in attendance at the forum. We caught up with some of the finest minds in the field to get their take on the state of play in banking and finance across everything from AI to machine learning to robotics. First, a word from Chris Bowes from Arago out of Frankfurt. Chris explained to us that the established economy needs to profit most from AI. There's so much pressure, he says, on industries like finance to respond. But why exactly are they under that sort of pressure?
The large verticals are very much attackable. They have commoditized services for the major part. They have optimized themselves so much that they are no longer very agile in most parts of the business they're doing, and which makes them attackable from companies that have much more funds for innovation and try out more things than is available in these large established companies. So that's what's putting them under pressure, and that there is the kind of the thinking, we've always done it like that, it has worked well, as where someone else comes along and say, like, look, this is what the client wants, so I'm just going to do that, and all of a sudden the clients disappear.
Chris Lamberton is a partner in EY, who leads their robotics and cognitive robotics capability in Europe. Chris talked about this idea of the so-called nirvana of an AI economy. What exactly does he mean by that, and why does he think that many continue to struggle with the concept?
I think there's an awful lot of hype and misunderstanding of exactly where everybody is in the journey towards my AI nirvana. The fact is, most organizations are really only just starting on that journey. And I think there's a lot of hype that says, you know, there's lots of people already, already there. I think that is really not quite true. I think there's a lot of very good examples of where AI is doing some fantastic stuff. And the combination of AI and robotics to kind of, you know, transform existing processes, create whole new services to clients. When it does work, it is fantastic. I think what we are seeing is companies struggling with how to start that process off. Most of our clients, I'm a financial services partner, have enormous organizations with a massive legacy estate. As mentioned in my talk, you know, one of my clients has 190 different claim systems around the world, each one of which is on average between 20 to 30 years old. That is, you know, hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars worth of installed investment. How do you move from that to a Siri-based, fully cognitive, you know, interactive kind of environment? It's a massive jump. So what we are really seeing is a lot of people are trying to get onto this process of moving to an AI-based kind of process, but it's really difficult to do it well. And we see, like I say, 30 to 50% of all RPA and AI cognitive robotics projects are failing.
Chris Lamberton there. Still to come on the Bulletin with UBS, we'll hear from more of the innovators and industry leaders who gathered in Zurich for the Future of Finance Forum. And we'll delve deeper into the workings of the brain, computer and human alike. We continue with Stefan Kinnaer, founder and CEO of a French company called Cognitalk, a startup in the AI space that focuses on improving technologies around human-machine interfaces. As has already been alluded to, there remain issues around trust in the AI space. How does Stefan think this needs to be addressed?
I think it's going to be a long process, so I don't think there is a silver bullet solution. We have to build that. But you know, first of all, I think your question is great because it highlights a certain awareness of there is this trust problem. And we need to get over that. In this situation, I usually refer to another situation that we all know and that we don't have any problems at all with, because a lot of us have kids. And we don't ask ourselves the same questions about trust. You know, we just go ahead, we have those kids, and we educate them, and then we hope it turns out well. Sometimes it doesn't, but you know, in most of the cases it does, and that's great. I think that once we get over this inflated hype, we come to solutions that are more serious than that, that are based on technology that does not only lead from input to output, but that also knows why it leads from this kind of input to this kind of output. That's what I refer to when I talk about knowledgeable intelligence. So the system knows why. So you can ask it, you know, why did you do that? And it will give you a comprehensive answer that you can actually understand. So I think trust is about understanding, fundamentally. We cannot trust something that we don't understand.
Well, we asked Stefan to expand on that, specifically to explain how these dynamics speak to the finance world.
There has been a lot of shuttering of trust into the finance world in the last few years. And so, you know, in our countries, the trust level has gone down from 70% in the early 2000s to something like 30% these days, or even 20% in countries like Germany and France. So it's really gone down a lot. So if we want to build this up, we have to make sure that these AI solutions that we want to bring into this world do not go against that, but we actually want to reconstruct some level of trust. So how can we do that? Well, it's, again, I mean, I was talking about kids before, now let's talk about people. You know, how do you build a trust relationship with a person? Well, you talk, you know, you ask questions, you check values, you want to understand what is the thought process of that person opposite side here that I'm talking to. And if you find some common ground, you start to build trust. And I believe that is the same thing that we need to do with AIs. We need to go to a level where we can actually talk to these AIs in a very natural way. This is what we are working on. So natural communication based on natural language. And if that is speech-based, it's wonderful. So you can really just talk to this AI and it understands you.
Stéphane Kinnaird. Next, we hear from Sindhu Joseph, the co-founder and CEO of Cognicor, based in Barcelona. They also have offices in Silicon Valley. They provide cognitive virtual assistants for businesses. What did Sindhu make of the day's agenda, and particularly this idea that there are so many great challenges and yet also opportunities in this space?
There are two sides of the coin. I think, you know, both of them were discussed today. One is large corporates' confusion to how to deploy AI systems and how to ground this to reality. And on the other side, the promises of AI, that is on one side going into a hype cycle and the other is like most people trying to decode it.
We asked Sindhu to pick up on the theme of AI systems today, and in particular to assess, well, where the technology is at. What can it do now? Is there overexcitement? And what can companies like hers do to drive this process forward?
That's a very interesting question. I'm not in the camp where the Stephen Hawkins recently said, you know, AI could be extremely dangerous. I don't believe that, you know, looking at where the current systems are, we do not have to worry about it for quite some time to come. But having said that, I'm also not in the other camp where in the next decade we will have, you know, AI systems that is in the capabilities of an amoeba brain. So it is not there either. So we are somewhere in the middle where it is very exciting and there are a lot more capabilities that AI is demonstrating today. One thing that I feel we should be doing is, like, you know, we have been, you know, my company is founded in 2012 and we have been talking about virtual conversations, conversational assistant from that time. And most companies are not in that space to deploy such a system. So the use cases are not there yet to kind of for us to go and deploy it. So market, I feel, instead of taking baby steps, of course, we need to be careful, but needs to kind of embrace this kind of trust more this kind of solutions and slowly deploy, even if baby steps, take those steps in reality and then, you know, try to grow from there.
In the arena of banking and finance, then, how does all this mean that institutions should strategize and plan for an AI future? Back to Chris Bowes, he explains that there are three key points to bear in mind.
The number one strategy is just become a supplier to a platform, meaning that you build an API around everything that a bank does and you don't know what your customer is. You're just the end of the workbench. That, I think, most banks could do fairly well today. The problem with that is that the margin for these kind of suppliers is very low. Like, you're becoming the end of the food chain, and currently you're sort of the top of the food chain. But it is a strategy that some banks might take and some might actually take it efficiently. It's when you see people putting APIs into everything and then not trying to own the entire supply chain or the entire value chain, means that they are ready to go into that business, which is much more low margin but very high volume. The second thing they could do is just increase the amount of service. I think especially in Switzerland, right, this is the way that a lot of banks have been going, increase the service, because in a platform world, you will always be part of a recommendation from a platform if you can satisfy the customer. I mean, satisfying the customer is absolutely key. That means that investment into service is something that will definitely pay off. And the third thing is true innovation. And increasing your service and adding to your service line, that's it might sound very innovative to a bank, but it isn't, right? It's adding things that people already know. Innovation would more be kind of the things that you don't know yet and try to be. I think the innovation bit is going to be the hardest. Obviously, the one with the highest margin, as we can see from people who have innovated new business models, but it's also going to be the hardest bit. And I have respect for the guys trying, so it's a good thing. You can either become a mass product, or you can become a much more service-oriented organization, or you can become a much more innovation-oriented organization, because if you are the only one offering something, then you also get picked by the platform.
Finally, on this week's program, let's hear from one of the keynote speakers, the neuroscientist and author Henning Beck. Henning talked to the delegates and guests about the theme of artificial intelligence.
He began by describing the working not of AI, but of our human brains, and building on that to explain why fears about AI, for instance that robots will one day take over the world, are, in his view, unfounded.
Nerve cells are dumb on their own. They cannot do anything much. But if you have a lot of them, like in the brain, 80 billion, you end up with something we call an activation pattern, a specific way of activity, and this is what we call a thought. So here, we don't have a difference between processing and output. Processing the information is the output itself. This is kind of tricky, but maybe similar to an orchestra. Consider you look at an orchestra from outside, seeing all the silent musicians sitting next to each other but not playing any music. You have no idea whatsoever melody or music this orchestra is able to play, just like the brain. When you look at the brain from outside, you have no idea what thoughts this system is able to think. In an orchestra, the melody, the music emerges when the musicians start to play with each other and interact. So the music is not stored anywhere in the orchestra, but it is how the orchestra behaves. Like a thought in our mind is not located anywhere. It is between all the neurons when they synchronize with each other, and there is no output needed. You don't have an output musician in the orchestra. The output in the orchestra is the activity of the whole system. And this is contrary to a computer, because no matter what kind of processing you use, whether it's algorithmic or a deep learning network or whatever fancy method we will come up with in the future, it will always be input processing output, without mistakes, hopefully. But if you don't do any mistakes, you just end up at the place you're a program for, but nowhere new. No artificial intelligence, no super intelligent computer will ever rule the world, because intelligence is not enough. If you follow rules and don't change them, you cannot change the world. You need to be able to think creatively, crazy, change rules instead of following them. I mean, intelligence is nothing special. Intelligence just means that you follow the rules as efficient and fast as possible. But that will not be enough.
And we will leave it to Henning Beck to wrap up the program, as he wrapped up the forum in Zurich with a quick reminder, a lesson, if you will, in the primacy of the human brain.
Try to see things differently. Try to change and break the thinking rules instead of following them. So, what is the next great idea? We don't know yet. But we can be pretty sure that we'll be created by brains. Not because we are smarter, faster, or more intelligent than computers, but the opposite. We are slower, irrational, and inefficient. This is giving us the ultimate edge we should appreciate and be more proud of. Because this is what makes us human.
And that is Henning Beck bringing us to the end of this 109th edition of The Bulletin with UBS, setting the agenda in the fast-moving world of finance each week on Monocle 24. This event was part of a global series of UBS Future of Finance forums, and there's more to come with a crowd capital-raising-focused forum in December in New York, and then later in Hong Kong, another looking at new forms of wealth and assets. We'll be bringing you more coverage of all of that right here on The Bulletin with UBS. But it's the aftermath of the US presidential election, which will be up for discussion in next week's edition. So do remember to tune in then. The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24.